work that I was involved with at Worcester, Ohio, really stems from some graduate work that I did at BYU, and also or some volunteer work that I did at BYU, and also some research that I was involved with at Texas A&M University. And I'll try to tie these all together of how this came to me researching soil fertility and looking at soil fertility in gardens. When I was at Brigham Young University, there were some researchers that were there that were going to Guatemala and Mexico and actually going back into these abandoned Mayan cities and tracking what the people were doing based on the phosphorus content in the soil and also the heavy metal concentration. So that's the first part. The second part, at Texas A&M University, we were looking at using compost, whether it was municipal biosolid compost or composted dairy manure, to secure and revegetate constructed soils. We found that following some of the guidelines that the state had set out for amending these soils, that it actually ended up causing that we would apply quite a bit of plant nutrients associated with these compost applications. So we did get good plant response, but we also loaded the soils with plant nutrients. Now flash forward from that time to 2008, and I'm in Worcester, Ohio, and I'm driving across campus, and I look over at our community garden, and there's a large pile of compost, and I notice people are filling buckets and taking that compost out and spreading it out onto their garden plots. Well, soon that pile of compost was gone, and in its place came another pile of compost, and that pile of compost was gone. And I thought, what are they doing? As an agronomist, as someone that I've spent some time looking at compost and looking at soils, I wondered, what were they doing? And so this really led me to being interested in learning more about how people are deciding how to amend their soils. So what were they doing? So in order to find out, I knew that we could find out by going back and looking at some soil tests. We could go back and see and kind of get a feel for how people were amending their soils. Now, by way of introduction, I think that community gardens have already been talked about quite a bit, and you've seen some images of those and people that are involved with them. And across the United States, across the world, community gardens have begun to pop up. And I happen to live in Worcester, Ohio, which is just south of Cleveland, Ohio, and not far from Detroit. And both of those places have experienced an interesting phenomenon where there's urban area that's converting back to this urban agriculture. So a majority of urbanized people in many undeveloped parts of the country, parts of their countries, they're involved in urban agriculture. There's a significant amount of fruit and vegetable produce that's produced in urban agriculture in the United States. And as we've seen already, local foods, there's more interest in that. And so with that, it's driving this transition to organic or local food or community agriculture. All of these are community-supported agriculture. All of these can be summarized under sustainable agriculture. But what I'm interested in, what I want to present today, is what happens when people, as it states here, that people are finding, or these researchers were finding in a review, that the best vegetable production they were getting was out of high rates and application frequency of organic residues. But we also have found in agriculture that when we apply a lot of manure or we apply a lot of compost, then we can tend to have soil test phosphorus build up in those soils relative to some of the other nutrients. So our question was, what was the impact of the what impact are the gardeners having on soil chemical characteristics related to their free use of composted dairy manure? And in the image in the left, you see that is an amended soil, and these soils generally get amended every year with compost. On the right, down here, there is you see compost that's been deposited on the soil surface around these vegetables, but compost has also been incorporated into these soils in quite a bit. So in 2008, there were 24 garden plots, and we took and soil sampled those. We pulled about 5 cores from each plot at 150 millimeters of depth, and we submitted those to the research lab and tested for soil pH, soil organic matter by loss on ignition, soil bray, phosphorus, and soil potassium. My colleague that helped me out on this project mapped this with a handheld unit. This is an image of the garden, and these are 20 foot by 20 foot garden plots, and there was also some 20 by 30. And on this side, rows columns 5 through 8, this was organic, or still is, and this side is conventional. The reason why there's more territory here that's included in this map is because the interest in the community garden has grown, and so the plots have increased, and I'll get to that in a moment. Over here, this is where, historically, the residue pile, the wood chip pile, and the compost pile were deposited. The wood chips were used to isolate those plots from each other. Compost was used to amend the soils, and then any plant residue was deposited into that pot if it wasn't incorporated. In 2010, we repeated this, where we sampled those 24 original plots again, and then there were 3 plots that were added in 2009 and 17 more plots that were added in 2010. We took composite soil samples again and submitted those to StarLab and got the results back. We also obtained permission. Everyone in that community garden has paid for the right to have that piece of land, and so we've asked for permission to go in and sample those soils. In 2010, this is what that map looked like when we sampled earlier this spring. Okay. These four images just show a little bit about our community garden. The community garden rests between a water tower and the Kent State University, one of the relay towers. And so on one side we have that, and on the other side we have this relay tower. That's not a very great place to do anything else with the land, and so it became a productive place to have a community garden. Over here on the left you see where the pointer is. There's the refuse pile, the wood chip pile, and also the compost pile. And these are the new plots that have just been tilled, and they were productive this year. If you look over here, this is a plot that has been amended with compost. They spread that out fairly well. In other places, it was deposited more haphazardly and then worked in. And then here's an image of earlier in the summer that was taken from the community garden. Most of the gardeners are people that are employed through the university, or they're graduate students or postdocs. And so it's a pretty diverse group. What I want to do is then look at some of the data that we found. Again, this side over here was the organic and over here was conventional. We took some soil samples around the perimeter just to see, to give us a background of what was there. And when we did that, we saw that the pH of the soil was somewhere between 6.29 and 6.54 around the perimeter. When we went inside of those plots and took samples, we ranged between 6.73 and a high of 7.41. So what we were seeing was that the amendments that were being applied, that the soil pH was increasing. Not surprisingly, because we saw this firsthand, some of these garden plots, the gardeners had dramatically increased the amount of organic matter. Some of these, it looked almost like potting soil at how much compost that they had actually delivered to those plots, whereas others were not much different than what we found in that sod or around the perimeter. In the conventional side around and on the organic side, it was about 4.5% organic matter, a little bit better than Utah. But in some cases, in some of these garden plots, the percent organic matter had increased up to 12.2%. There are some others that were 11% organic matter, and down here, 10%. I have identified these because we'll be coming back to those when we look at some of the other nutrients. But that's a pretty marked difference between 4% and then bringing it up to 12. This is a little bit dark, and I apologize that you can't see some of these numbers that are embedded in this. But I have over here, down here, the concentration in parts per million of soil test phosphorus. And if you look at this, the concentration in the conventional perimeter and around the organic was 48 and 37. That's okay for crops. That's a little bit low for potatoes, but most crops will be okay with that concentration. When we looked at where those soils fell then, almost all the plots were above 100 parts per million. Anything above 100 is generally excessive. And so agronomically speaking, the garden plots we had bumped, or the gardeners had increased that concentration quite a bit. Needless to say, they didn't need to apply very much more amendment for the soil phosphorus. Some numbers that I'll identify, and again, I apologize, you can't see these very well. Up here in A3, this was 289 parts per million. That's very high. If you multiply that by 2, that gets you into the pounds per acre range for how much phosphorus is there. And then this is 283. We have 252. Our low organic matter soil was 112. I didn't do, and I'm not showing it here, but we did correlations between organic matter and these nutrients, and they correlate pretty well. We're pretty confident that most of these nutrients were being delivered to that garden through the organic matter. Exchangeable potassium. Now, I've looked at some different sources, but once we're above about 225 parts per million, we're into the excessive range. The soils around the perimeter were already quite high. So that soil was already quite high in potassium, and in the one case, the concentration was over 1,000 parts per million. In 2010, we went back and looked at the soil pH again, and we saw that we were still increasing soil pH. So the compost that was being added was still increasing soil pH, and in those areas, in these new plots that had been added, we saw what we would have expected to see, that those soils were similar to what was in the perimeter in that first study in 2008. Most of the soils were neutral to slightly alkaline where they had been gardening for a while. Percent organic matter. Overall, percent organic matter continued to increase. In this case, I'm not sure what happened, but this wasn't 11% in 2008, but it was down to 4.5%. I think it was probably sampling error that caused that to occur. But overall, the plots that had been in place, and I have to say, and I apologize for not saying this, these garden plots started in or were initiated in 2002. And so between 2002 and 2008, that was that first set. And this is 2 years later. The gardeners have already increased the organic matter by quite a bit, even in that two-year span. So it continued to happen. We didn't go out and observe how they were applying the compost or who was doing it, but overall, people continued to apply compost and increase the organic matter. Overall, the soil test phosphorus continued to climb in those plots. When we compared 2008 to 2010, some of the plots were very low and would have responded to compost applications, which I'm sure they received. In this case, N3 had a concentration of 13 parts per million, but these soils where compost was added again, like I said before, continued to climb. And looking at exchangeable potassium in concentration, those were low in those north plots again, and the plots continued to climb in concentration so that these soils were just becoming excessively excessive. Over here, this was interesting to me, this is where those residual piles had been made. People had been depositing their plant materials that they had cleared off of their plots. This wasn't a compost pile. It was just plant materials. And it was interesting to see how much exchangeable potassium was coming out of those plant piles. And so those soils were loading, being loaded up with potassium, even though very little compost had been added. It's just coming from the plant residues themselves. In conclusion, within 6 years of garden establishment, the gardener behavior had intensively managed plots led to increased soil pH, which just continued to increase. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. We'll go back to the community garden and test these soils about every 2 years and see how things are changing. The soil organic matter increased and continues to increase between 2008 and 2010. And most of the soils, a majority of them, in the 90% range to 100%, were excessive with soil test phosphorus and exchangeable potassium. What this leads to is what I'm really interested in. This is really the baseline to see what the gardeners were doing. But we want to know, how are they making these decisions? That's what I'm interested in. Looking at the urban gardener or the person who's working in a community garden, how are they making the decision for how much compost to apply? How are they deciding how much fertilizer to apply or how to amend the soils? And how are they deciding when to apply it? My just intuition says that what's happening is that going back to the introduction, that more is usually better, that's what people are probably following, that more is better. The compost pile's not that far. The buckets aren't that heavy. I'll just take more compost, and because if I don't, everyone else will get too much compost. And once we have that determined, by offering these people surveys to really get an idea of how they're amending their soils, then what I hope to do is to develop some educational material so that we can give those to gardeners to say, look, let's be more sustainable in the way that you're using the compost. At some point, we just don't need to add anymore for the phosphorus, for the potassium. Now, we may have to do something for nitrogen, but with the organic matter concentrations as high as they are, I imagine there's a lot of nitrogen that's mineralizing and becoming available. Thank you.